My fellow Americans, it has now become clear that we stand alone with our plans for ground infantry of Iraq. Which is why today I evoke the words of another great wartime leader, Sir Winston Cornhill. We will wipe them with the bleaches. We will fight them with our parakeets. We will spite them using Heather Mills. We will never, ever change our gender.
Dead ringers.
New to BBC Enterprises, a DVD all Alan Rickman fans can keep and treasure forever. Yes, Alan Rickman plays the token baddie in Hollywood films. Who can forget his carefully honed performance in Die Hard?
I'll get you, John McClane.
His unique take on the Sheriff of Nottingham in Robin of Sherwood.
I'll get you, Robin of Sherwood.
And, of course, his towering performance in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
I'll get you, Harry Potter.
Also includes footage of Alan Rickman confronting his agent about being hopelessly typecast forever.
I'll get you, lousy agent.
Plus, buy Alan Rickman the DVD and we'll give you a copy of Judi Dench Plays Every Woman Over 40 in Every British Film completely free.
Hello, I'm Iris Murdoch. I'll get you, A.S. Byatt.
Hello there and welcome to Film 2002 with me, Jonathan Wass. Red and yellow and pink and green, orange and purple and blue. And that's only my suit. Quite restrained today, then. We must grow of a Hollywood remake of classic 60s movie The Italian Job. And this time the famous cliffhanger ending will be resolved.
Right, lads, I've got an idea. A large quantity of gold is at one end of our precariously balanced lorry, but we can't get at it. So we need some financial genius to explain what all this means.
Hi, I'm Alvin Hall. I use the double entry method, and I'm not talking about accountancy. Okay, I want you to imagine that your precariously balanced gold is this cheesecake.
How's that meant to help?
Your gold is the cheesecake.
No, Alvin, I need a lot more.
Look at the cheesecake!
Why would I
want... The cheesecake!
Now that you've expressed it in patisserie form, I understand the problem. I really do. Thanks, Alvin. Actually, you've given me an idea. I can make the truck lighter if I get rid of any unnecessary cargo.
Hey, what are you doing?
You're watching the 10 o'clock news with me, Michael Burke. It's getting hot in here, so take off all your clothes. More on that story later. The General Medical Council is hearing the case of a GP accused of trading in human organs. Wheeling and dealing in this grisly trade is thriving. Here's our man on the scene.
Hello, I'm David Dickinson. Welcome to Organ Hunt. Now, I know a thing or two about organ transplants. After all, my entire skin was grafted onto me straight from Sue Barker's tortoise. Now, let's see what I can find in this darkened alley in the middle of downtown Shepton Mallet. Ooh, lovely couple of lungs here. This liver interests me as well, because from the damage, I think it might be Georgian. Yep, it's definitely George Best's. Cheap, but not worth the risk. And finally, organ hunters, do bear in mind that not all transplants work. There was a horrible case recently. A bargain hunt was removed from the daytime schedule and placed into the evening. What a disaster. I tell you, give it 6 months and I'll be flogging my kidney just to pay the mortgage. Oh, cheap as chips.
BBC Radio 4, I'm Charlotte Green. for men that don't have to try too hard. As interactive television services continue to grow, Radio 4 has announced it won't get left behind. And as a result, listeners can now interact directly with programmes. For example, today, if you want John Humphreys to liven things up by saying what he really thinks, press the FM button on your radio now.
Mr. Prescott, I've been listening to you prattling away about the Earth Summit for the last 5 minutes, so my question to you is, why don't you just shut the for once, you great big fat pie-eating
Bored with Melvin Bragg, wish he was more like DJ Tim Westwood, press your FM button now.
Hello and welcome to my new series of Voices of the Powerless. With me, Sir Solid Melvin Bragg. We're talking big hair, baby. Nothing but big hair. Me and my crew is hanging out in Suffolk and bigging it up with the Reformation. Is you looking at me, bitch? If you are, I'll pop a cap in your white ass.
Finally, if you want Matt Smith to come back and present Go For It, press the FM button now. Interactive Radio 4. Power at your fingertips.
My name is Greg Dyke. And I am Director General of the BBC. When I came here, it was a big corporation, but it was out of shape. Do you know, people often come up to me and ask me how I remain so cool and calm in such a high-pressure job. It's because I was given one of those executive toys for stress relief. Do you know what you do? You just sit it on your desk, and whenever someone starts winding you up, you punch it, and all the stress just evaporates. Yeah, it's called Jim Davison.
Woo! Yeah, g'day, viewers. It's Steve Irwin, back here, deep in the jungle, for more of the world's most dangerous critters. Yeah, and just there, through that clearing, is the most deadly species I've spotted so far. One rarely seen in the Australian bush. Yeah, it's the Z-list nobodies on ITV's I'm a Celebrity. Get me out of here.
Get it off.
Ooh, that's a deadly redback spider that's landed on Christine Hamilton's foot. Crikey, I've got to act quickly. Ooh, relax. The noxious vermin is dead. So off you go, little spider. Christine's not going to be bothering you anymore. Oh no, the two dominant males, Yuri Geller and Nigel Benn, have split from the pack.
Nigel, do you need any psychic help to prise that leech off of you?
No, listen, I don't. Tara Palmer Tomkinson, you know. Yeah, she's bound to stop snogging me eventually. You know, I shouldn't even be here. I didn't even agree to appear on this. You know, I just walked into a shop and suddenly I found myself in the jungle having this amazing adventure. I tell you, I made a real mistake when I insisted everybody call me Mr. Ben.
Yeah, meanwhile, Nigel has been so distracted by this that he hasn't noticed he's being stalked by one of his few natural predators.
Since you ask... One was slightly shocked the producers chose a nobody such as him over a nobody such as oneself to appear on this trash.
Meanwhile, back in the camp, Rona has nothing but praise for Tony Blackburn.
You know, you've adapted incredibly well to life in the wilderness.
Rona, 15 years at Capital Gold have been damn good practice. No, seriously.
Oh, hang on, stand absolutely still, Tony. I've just spotted something really nasty nesting on your head.
Oh, no, what is it?
Your wig. Oh, that's frightening.
And look at this, Tara Palmer has just had a bucket of maggots poured on her head.
Oh, no, maggots on my head. Oh, that's so last season.
Right, now I'm just going to back out of here and I should be fine as long as none of them spots that I've got a camera.
Oh, great.
He's got a camera.
He's got a camera. That's brilliant.
Brilliant. Quick.
Danger.
BBC Radio 3. The sound of one hand clapping. Only quieter. That was Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony.
Music so sublime that playing it for the likes of you is something of a sick joke. Now, I've been handed a news item that may be of interest to Radio 3 listeners. It's a survey which says that the number of young people attending classical concerts has plummeted. Good. Oh, but what's this? Apparently, 40% of 18 to 24-year-olds tuned into classical musical radio last year. I feel sullied now. My music being heard by the young. What next? The poor? The female? I'm pretty uncomfortable with the idea of listeners in the first place. If people are listening to my broadcast, they might think it's intended for their enjoyment, and that's not the point of Radio 3 at all. So I say, long may classical music lovers dwindle. Dwindle and dwindle and dwindle until the only person left is me. On my own, in a room with Wagner's Ring Cycle. And a box of Kleenex. Ooh, Siegfried does make me weep so. BBC Radio 3. I want to be alone.
I'm Lowry Turner, and welcome to another edition of Would Like to Meet, Blind Date with a Media Studies degree. This week's subject is Anne. She's a confident, successful woman. You'd think she'd be Miss Popularity, but for some reason, she's not.
So? You think I'm a charmless witch who's as popular with men as gonorrhea? And you want to turn me into a vulgar, flashy tart like everyone else on your show?
Anne Robinson's threatening manner may be handy on the weakest link, but it makes her about as dateable as a bag of rats.
I like men to be strong and self-assured. That way it's more fun when I make them weep.
Tracy Cox is an Australian charm expert, or, to put it another way, an oxymoron.
Maybe Anne is beginning to put her date at his ease. Look, she's asking the waiter to change the music, maybe to something more romantic.
Right, random man. On this first date, you've managed a pathetic blue polo neck sweater and a feeble pair of chinos. Hardly George Clooney, are you?
Well, my friends tell me I'm rather dashing.
Who are your friends? Stevie Wonder and some bats? And I notice you've not banked any deodorant for weeks.
Oh. Well, at least I don't look like Basil Brush eating a bowl of lemons.
Random man, you are the weakest date. Goodbye.
My name is Greg Dyke, and I am Director General of the BBC. Bring back Bagpuss. That's never going to happen. No girlfriend of mine is going out to work. Here, what's this nonsense about Chris Evans wanting to buy his very own television station? That idea is rubbish. Partially because Chris has no concept of the multitude of skills someone in that position needs to possess. But mostly because he already owns one. No, that's right. I've already sold him BBC Two at least 3 times. Well, if you can't take advantage of a man when he's pissed, when can you?
Thank you. Good evening. My first guest tonight is someone whom I've personally admired for many, many years. They are the person who very kindly is about to answer the phone in this particular branch of Pizza Hut.
Good afternoon, Cameron Chow, Pizza Hut.
Yes, hello there. Could I begin by just asking your name?
No, I'm Steve. I'm Steve, anyway.
So, Steve, I suppose I could start with asking you, you know, how many orders do you think you managed to actually get through in one single day?
In a day, well, it can vary between, like, maybe 120 orders going up to about 200 orders, depends on how busy it is, but obviously during the summer period at the moment, it is a lot quieter, and so you're looking around about, on average, about 100 orders, really.
You know, so out of all of those orders that you inevitably have to deal with every day, is there one classic that stands out? Is there one topping which is your all-time favourite?
Well, there are a number of different varieties of pizza.
I remember with a particular affection that fantastic pineapple special that you once did. I'm particularly proud of them.
Yeah, we had the ham and pineapple still at the moment called the Hawaiian. But we are trying to, you know, the company is trying to sell other particular items as well. For example, the basic called the stuffed crust and the quad as well. We actually choose four pieces in one.
I mean, and yours is, you know, a particularly interesting story. I mean, you know, from your beginnings and, you know, at this point now where you are making dough circles, putting the tomato and cheese on it, and then, you know, cooking it. I mean, you must have seen a great number of changes over this, you know, period of time.
That's right. I've been with the company a long time, and first of all, to start off with, actually, we had to make the dough ourselves, you know, from the flour and from the yeast and so on, but now we get it from the supplier as a frozen product.
What are the influences that you have had, you know, in your role as a pizza creator? I mean, do you ever think of the pizzas perhaps made by the great Muhammad Ali or the late Gene Kelly? Has this shaped in any way the way that you approach, you know, doing this?
Well, that's interesting, really. I don't know. I suppose when he's playing the music, if you have the music on sometimes, then you can have a dance around while you're making the pizza, I suppose, especially if you know the steps.
I suppose, you know, if you hadn't become, you know, this pizza constructor that you have become now, if you'd followed a different line, do you think there's another occupation that you might have taken, you know, perhaps a famous rock star or maybe a famous actor, something like that?
I don't know about that, really. Maybe a computer scientist or something.
I wish you well in, you know, whatever you may, yeah, you know, decide to do.
And, all right, then.
Congratulations on your 10 years there. Steve, ladies and gentlemen.
Steve, that's right, yes.
Just when you thought it was safe to play near heavy machinery whilst running out near parked cars without dipping your headlights, after letting strangers into your home without checking their ID, comes Public Information Films, the movie, 3. And here's to you,
Mrs. Robinson. Come over to the bed, Benjamin.
Oh, no, I don't want to come over to the bed, Mrs. Robinson.
Come over to the bed, Benjamin.
Oh, no, I don't want to come over to the bed, Mrs. Robinson.
It's because you think I'm going to seduce you, isn't it, Benjamin?
No, it's because you've still got your electric blanket switched on. Don't you know that all electrical equipment should be switched off before you go to bed?
Oh, my God, I've just realized. Before I led you upstairs, I don't think I unplugged the TV.
But just when all seemed lost, help came from the most unexpected of sources. A small boy and a cartoon cat, played by Eddie Murphy and Marlon Brando.
Now, count your leggings, dance, woman, because I unplugged the TV for you. Yeah, along with your stereo, your video, and your waffle line. Because Charlie says you gotta be careful around the electricity. Ain't that right, Charlie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's not in my house, so I gotta... I'm in the kitchen, man. I wash it up, and then I come downstairs. When was that flammable? There's that flammable thing there. I know what happened.
Yeah, you better do what he says, Benjamin, or you're going to wake up with a horse's head in your bed. Or even worse, Mrs. Robinson will turn into Jerry Hall.
The horror.
BBC Radio 4, I'm Brian Perkins. The evil Trevor out of EastEnders of Radio 4. The headlines. No one's watching BBC 4 because it's dull, but it's here to stay. A review of its esoteric output argues that it may attract more viewers if it were more populist. So here's a clip from the pilot episode of Brian Sewell's Generation Game.
Yes, it is quite exquisite to see you exquisite. And here is my lovely assistant, Doris Lessing. Doris, would you be so kind as to furnish myself and this present with a twirl?
We are all of us made by war, twisted and warped by war.
Lovely. Now, let us perambulate over here to the conveyor belt. You, unwashed contestant, have precisely 1/60th of an hour to recall the items that were rather gaudily, in my view, on display. I will assist you. Begin. Frankly, Odalisque and Bourgeois Matisse studies still life with the Magnolia, circa 1941.
A painting.
Yes, the representation of Picasso's Crucial Dame Vassal d'Avignon of 1987, a work that compelled the academic nude into the 20th century.
Another painting.
Cuddly toy.
Cuddly toy.
Didn't he do atrociously? And now the lovely Doris. Did you calculate the sum total of its spoils?
All sanity depends on this. That it should be a delight to feel heat strike the skin, a delight to stand upright, knowing the bones are moving easily under the flesh.
Just the cuddly toy, then.
Could I not have the teas made instead?
Silence, Prill. Farewell.
My name is Greg Dyke.
Do you know, people often come up to me in the street and say, Greg, why are so many BBC game shows aggressive? And then they say to me, ow, why did you hit me? And then a few minutes later they say, please, please stop kicking me. And then they say, someone call the police and an ambulance, he's out of his mind. And then I say to them, I've no idea why BBC game shows are so aggressive. But there's one thing I do know. If you don't stop bleeding all over my Gucci loafers, you're going to get me angry. And you don't want to see me angry. Oi, Yentop, where's that shiatsu massage you promised me?
Hello, I'm Bevan Bragg. Part-time historian, full-time Elvis impersonator. This week on the South Bank Show, we look back at the phenomenon that is Star Wars. Its most enduring character, of course, is the villain, Darth Vader.
You are strong in the ways of the Force, Luke, but you are not a Jedi yet.
But few people realize he first spoke like this.
You're strong in the ways of the Force, Luke, but you're not a Jedi yet.
Yes, popular Cornish Green Curd Band Dave Prowse was dubbed in the original to get rid of his silly accent. And there have been fears expressed that with Star Wars more popular than ever, that George Lucas is now intent on dubbing all celebrities with silly yokel accents, as this recording from a recent performance by Pam Ayres shows.
Oh, I wish I'd looked after my teeth and spotted the perils beneath. All the toffees I chewed and the sweet sticky food. Oh, I wish I'd looked after my teeth.
The seriousness of the situation is made all too clear in this clip from the Wurzels comeback tour.
I have 20 acres, and you have 43. So I have a brand new combine harvester, and I'll give you the key, I will.
This is Melvin Bragg signing off with this message for Mark Lawson. Mark, I am your father.
I am not waiting for them lily liver allies any longer. The time to prevaricose has passed. Iraq can no longer be run by that evil tyrant, Salman Pustain. Make no mistake, inoption is not a tangerine. I'm going to push this button right now and fire off the first of our missiles, slam bang at their capital, Bagpuss. It's not working, but my launch the nuclear weapons button always works. Why is it not working?
Yeah, I'll tell you why it's not working, you militaristic moron. Because I disconnected it, that's why. Because Charlie says it's dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, so why are you making a movie pissing on the fuck when I blow up and blah?
You see, Charlie says unilaterally evading Iraq would breach the UN Covenant number 782 and risk inflaming tensions in the region.
Okay, the invasion's off. But Charlie, can I still play with these matches?
I don't know. Where's the door? Where is it? I don't think I'm worth it, asshole.
It's 6 weeks later, and the would-like-to-meet team have transformed Anne Robinson.
But the big test is, will her date give her the chance to take cheap shots at him? And will she be able to resist that?
Right. Hello. nice to meet you.
Yeah, hi, Anne. I'm sorry I'm late, but I got lost. Me, a publisher of A to Z's as well.
That's the kind of mistake anyone could make.
I didn't introduce myself, by the way. My name's Head, Richard Head, and, well, my best friends call me Dick.
What a nice, friendly name.
Well, yeah, it's Welsh, in fact. I'm from Wales, you know, originally.
Must keep insult to myself. Need to be patronising, almost overwhelming. Oh, it's no use. You're an ugly, sheep-shagging moron with a face like an explosion. Dickhead, you are the weakest date. Goodbye. Damn, I've blown it, haven't I?
Oh, can I be your slave?
I'm Kirsty Young. Young, dumb, and full of come-hither looks. The main headline tonight, Kate Adie is rumoured to join Channel 5, which might make the soft porn more interesting.
Hello, I have come also from Buckhurst Hill to fix your boiler.
Well, this is the most appalling scene. I've invited you here to fix my boiler, and all that I'm wearing is my see-through flak jacket. The dubbing on this film is an atrocity, the dialogue is painful, and what is that music? This is Kate Adie bending over a washing machine for Channel 5.
Listening to Dead Ringers. It was performed by John Colshaw, Jan Ravens, Mark Perry, Kevin Connolly, and Phil Cornwall. It was written by Neff Fountain and Tom Jameson, John Holmes, Lawrence Howarth, Tony Roach, John Colshaw, and Richard Ward. The producer is Bill Dare.
And the team will be back with more mayhem at the same time next week on Radio 4. Well, it's time for the Archers now, and Clary is concerned that Joe is ill.
Joe, you should leave off building that shed. You must have a terrible cold. I've never heard you this banged up.
I am not sick, woman. They just didn't like my ridiculous yokel accent, so Lucasfilm demanded my voice be dubbed. Leave me now. I must return to the lower paddock at Grange Farm.
Oh, why?
I will not rest until the crop circle is complete.
You should put your feet up, Joe, and relax.
Put my feet up? That won't get the Ewoks in.